Tai tässä on vasta. Okay. How does this sound in the back? Can you hear me? Not too many additional sounds of interference or anything? Good. These microphones are a little bit annoying. I was hoping that there'd be one of those bigger microphones that we could pass between us, but there isn't, so I'm using these small mics to make ourselves heard instead. Hopefully you can hear us, and we've also got the recording going again. So hopefully this is working in those terms as well. I've never really used this self-recording facility before, but looks like it's okay, so fingers crossed. So welcome to lecture number 5 of this author studio course this autumn. You've met me before in the first lecture. My name is Pertti Ahonen. I'm from history and ethnology here. And this is my colleague Tuomas Laine-Frigren, our special guest today, who is also going to be with us in today's session. So welcome to all of you, first of all. I'd like to pass around this sheet again, where you could maybe sign your names. Okay. So you've had the first 4 lectures by now, and there's going to be a slight shift of focus in the topic material in these last 2 lectures. So far, it's been about journals, journal articles, publishing those, what sorts of journals there are, how to approach writing a journal article, how to try to market it to journals, and so on. But in the last 2 lectures now, we're going to shift more in the direction of books, book form publications. And today, in particular, we're going to address edited volumes, anthologies, volumes that bring together contributions from a number of different people, usually united by some kind of more or less coherent theme that the volumes have. And then next week, Wednesday, again, in the usual room, 306 in the Historica building, I'll be talking about monographs, so single-authored, normally, books of an academic content. And next week, also, one aspect that I'll stress in particular has to do with book proposals, writing them, what's expected in terms of book proposal and approaching a publisher in that form. But today, as I said, we have a very special guest, Tuomas Laine-Frigren, who...
Hello.
...who very, very recently has completed a major edited volume together with other colleagues. That has just appeared...
Actually, just now.
Just now. Today?
Or today, tomorrow, maybe. Tomorrow.
Right. So, brand new stuff coming out. Hot off the press, as they say. So, Tuomas is going to, in particular, lend us his very fresh expertise in the field of putting together edited volumes, how to go about that, but also looking at the sort of practical process and also, I guess, some of the complications or at least twists in the road that can and usually do come along in the process. So, since we are shifting more in the direction of books as a publication form for academic output, I'd like to start today by making you work amongst yourself a little bit at first, particularly by reflecting on this balance between these two forms, really, of academic output. Journals, on the one hand, in many ways, there's more and more emphasis on that. It's in some ways more easily quantifiable in terms of the bibliometric devices that are available that tend to pick up particularly effectively on journal articles, especially from sort of major internationally highly regarded journals, whereas books sometimes get a little bit sidetracked in that. Not always, but that can be the case, certainly in the sorts of evaluation processes that stress more the natural science format, which tends to be very much to publish in the form of articles rather than books. But on the book side of things, certainly in the humanities, we're both historians, and in our field, books still are very important. Both monographs and edited volumes can have a really major impact, and often can be the sort of really leading foundational studies of a given field. But that's not necessarily the case in all other fields, so we'd like to sort of reflect on that today. And also a bit later on today, we're going to focus in particular on the edited volume that Tuomas has brought out together with two other colleagues, which is called Encountering Crises of the Mind, Madness, Culture and Society, 1200 to the 1900s, with Brill. That's just come out, as we just heard. But before we get to Tuomas's book, I'd like us to dwell a little bit on the sort of distinctions and differences between journal articles and books as sort of publication forms and forums. And in Moodle, I'd put up these four things for you to reflect on and to think about a little bit in preparation for today's class and also for the final class next week. As I mentioned, next week we're going to deal in some depth with question three here. So particularly for next week, if you haven't already done so, I'd like you to pay a little bit attention to the book proposal side of things. Maybe go to a couple of publishers' web pages, have a look at the kinds of guidelines that are given there, what's expected, what sort of guidelines and advice is given regarding that. But today, we'll start more with the balance, really, between journal articles and books. And I'd ask you to do a little bit of that as well in preparation. First, to reflect on the balance in your own field between journal articles on the one hand and books, including both monographs and edited volumes on the other. In terms of, can you sort of identify one form or the other as the more significant in your field, or is that not really the case? Are they sort of both equally weighty and relevant? And then secondly, going along from that, to also think about what some of the most significant books, if indeed books are important in your field, what some of the most important books might be in your own field. You can probably think of a few key authors, a few key studies that keep coming up in the literature a lot. And I'd ask you to think a little bit about that. What sorts of publishers are the ones that seem to publish a lot of these leading studies? Can you identify certain particular names that keep coming up again and again in the field among the kind of key scholars whose output is really important? So to get things going today, I'd like you to think about these two things. First, the balance between journal articles and books, and second, what sorts of books in your own field are the key studies and where they have been published. Are there sort of particular publishing houses that tend to be dominant in the field? And I'd like you to kind of work in small groups. I guess Laura last week made you work in groups of three, so let's say maybe three or four, if you can sort of form little groups of about three or four, and talk to each other about this, about your fields, about the importance of these two kinds of publishing formats, and about which sorts of book publishers tend to stand out, if there are any that do stand out. So we'll give you maybe 5 to 10 minutes to...
5 to 10 minutes, yeah.
Think about that, and then we'll kind of talk about it. So if you could form little groups, please.
Yep. Joo, ei pitäisikö mennä tuonne... Luuletko, että tarvii sitten se mikrofonia kierrättää vain...
Mäkin
voin vaikka mennä tuonne puolelle vaikka tämä. Ihan miten.
Niin, tai joo, tietysti voidaan.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Tietysti voidaan toinen ottaa toinen Mm-hmm.
Mm. Tuo menee pimentoon aina välillä, se on aina vähän ärsyttävää. Niin. A bit annoying. Mm. Mm. Mä en siis kerro sitä unesta, minkä mä näin toissa yönä, missä oli meidän laitoksen henkilökunta. Sen, joo. Tosi paljon kyllä kirjoitushommia mulla tällä hetkellä, että se on aika semmoinen, se on tietysti kivaa, mutta se on aina vähän semmoista stressaavaa, kun pitää monta asiaa ajatella niin kuin ikään samaa.
Niin.
Niin, kaksi niin kuin päällekkäin oikeastaan. Ja tai itse asiassa niin tosiaan se Slavic Reviewn homma, niin mistä mä puhuin, niin se on niin kuin conditionally accepted now, ja niin kuin, että siihen niin kuin se pyysi se päätoimittaja vielä jotain muutoksia, pieniä muutoksia, että vähän niin kuin sitä ei. No on, mutta se on jännä tästä UFO-luokituksessa, se on mun mielestä niin kuin nyt jostain syystä laskenut, vaikka se on oikeasti tämän meidän alan niin kuin ykköslehti. Niin, se on erikoisia, mutta mistä se johtuu sitten? Että... Niin se varmaan on. Mutta tavallaan siis, jos ajatellaan, että on kansallisesti suomalaisille historian tutkijoille tärkeitä lehtiä, niin sitten ikään kuin siinä niin suomalaiset sitten paljon julkaisee siinä lehdessä loppujen lopuksi. Että se on, tai jotkut totta kai julkaistaan, missä Aleksanterin instituuttiporukoita siellä julkaisee, ja tietysti Venäjä Itä-Euroopan tutkimus. Mutta varmaan niin kuin sellaisena volyyminä ole niin tärkeä kuin moni muu, vaikka jotkut Journal of Contemporary History tai tämmöiset voivat ehkä. Niin. No kun mun mielestä se on kakkonen, joo, mutta sitten joku tuossa vähän aikaa sitten sanoi, että se olisi jopa ykkönen. Mm. 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 Täytyy tarkistaa. No sitä mä meinasin, että se syy voi olla semmoinen just niihin laskuihin, että sitä ei, se ei ole ikään kuin prosentuaalisesti merkittävä täällä. mutta just toi, että se niin kuin sen Slavic Reviewn kanssa työskennellessä, niin siis niin kuin pelkästään positiivisia kokemuksia, että älyttömän hyviä kommentteja, semmoista paneutumista. Et vähän niin kuin Anu Lahtisella Haikissa tällä hetkellä, niin se paneutuu valtavasti niin kuin jokaisen artikkeliin, antaa sitten lopulta myös päätoimittajan palautetta. Että se on semmoinen kauttamatta mukava tätä. Moi. Huomio kohdistuu siihen ihan yhteenkin vähäiseen artikkeliin, semmoinen niin kuin positiivinen. Se on kiva tehdä. Niin ne muutokset pitäisi tehdä marraskuun puoliväliin mennessä. Sitten sit on pari muuta vielä sitten tässä. Niin tulee niin. Joo. Mutta siis parin näyden, jos tuo uniin nämä kaikki hommat, niin just niin kuin mä joskus kertoo sitten. Hauskoja unia. No niin. Niin, tuossa Starkin Laura piti sitten viimeksi vai? Joo. Meillä oli joku vuosi takaperin laitoksella semmoinen Author Studio, jossa piti Jari ja sitten toi Juha Antti ja sitten oli se sosiaalihistorioitsija, niiden kaveri tämä, mikä täälläkin on ollut monta kertaa Jyväskylässä ja mikä oli siis tuo Social Science History Conferenceissa, siis tämä aika iso nimi. No, tulee kohta mieleen, niin ne piti kolmistaan sitä ja sitten me niinku kirjoitettiin myös artikkelia siellä.
Joo, tällä viikolla on itse semmoinen jatko-osa, joka alkaa Laura ja Jari ja minä. Mm. Se on vaan niin kuin Jelani ja työstä.
Oma artikkeli. Se on kyllä tosi hyvä.
Joo, se on. No, on sitten
varsinkin. Niin. Niin, se pääsee sitten tekemiseen kiinni. Ihmisillä toivottavasti löytyy sitten artikkeli, joka sitten on hyvä. Siinä kartoitettiin aluksi niin kuin mahdollisia julkaisufoorumeita. Sitten Juha Antti hyvinkin kikseliästi ja innovatiivisesti etsi ihmisille yllättäviäkin paikkoja, missä voisi tulokulmaa muuttamalla ikään kuin saada sitä artikkelia johonkin ihan yllättäväänkin paikkaan. Silloin oli meidän laitoksella minusta vielä enemmän kuin nykyään, tai aika paljonkin enemmän niin kuin tämä UFO-homma, niin kuin in. Puhuttiin paljon tuloksen tekemisestä. Mun mielestä nykyään ei ainakaan mun korviin kuulu niin paljon sitä. En mä tiedä, mikä sun ajatus siitä on, mutta silloin jotenkin, silloin tällöin, niin kuin, vai oliko se, että oli tohtori koulutettava, mutta muistan paljon puhuttiin silloin siitä niin kuin myös tohtori koulutettavien keskuudessa, että Kuinka paljon tulostavoitteita meillä pitää olla.
Itse asiassa meillä on ollut vähän niin kuin tavoitteena.
Okei. Okay. Se kuulostaa ihan hyvältä. Nythän on kuitenkin ilmestynyt kansainvälistä tutkimustakin siitä, että kilpailu ei edistä laatua.
Niin. Laatuun ja mielekkäiseen tutkimukseen, eikä semmoiseen numeraaliseen, missä autiivisiin vaan saattaa. Niin.
On se. Joo. Voidaan varmaan kohta varmaan voidaan jatkaa.
Tänne jotain vielä. Pitäisikö varoittaa jo?
Niin, kapalo mielessä.
Okay, so how about one more minute or so, and then we'll start talking as a group. Okay, thank you. So now perhaps we can open this up a little bit and talk about these issues, at least for a little while. So who would like to start with some observations about journal versus book form publishing? How does it look in your particular field? Is one better, more important, more heavily weighted than the other? And wait, I've got to bring the microphone to you so that it can be recorded.
We can twirl around and give you the microphone.
Yeah, thank you. So in our group, we... Okay, yeah. In our group, we come from literary studies, political studies, and... Sorry, hopefully I get it right. And museum studies. And in all these fields, we felt like it's the edited volumes and books, they're quite prestigious and...
Yeah, maybe a bit louder.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, in all of our fields, we felt that books are prestigious, and most of the research of value is published through books. Also, articles, of course, they serve different purposes, but yeah.
Okay, so museum studies, cultural studies, you said, literary studies, so humanities, yeah, fields, and books and edited volumes, kind of are the ones that set the mark in a way, that are the leading ones. Mm-hmm. Okay. Everyone agree with that regarding their own areas? Lots of nodding. Yeah. Please.
Thank you. In our group, we are from political studies, social studies, and also social studies. So actually, on the first question, we came up with an idea, like a summary, that actually... in order to find what kind of balance in terms of the significances of the study which appears in book or in article, actually this question depends on the reader. What kind of aim do you have before starting the reading and before searching? If you want to understand some theoretical approach or to discover a theoretical or methodological breakthrough, so it's better to go and to look what kind of books you can find, because the book is enough space to outline the argument, evidences, and all other stuff. So much more room for explanation why it's a significant approach or something like that. But if you want to find kind of mainstream and updated information on what is going on right now or some time ago, so you have to go and to search in a journal what kind of stuff you want to grasp and what you want to find there. So it depends, actually. But, of course, it is relevant only to those journals and books which are published in famous and well-known publishing houses like Sage, Cambridge, Oxford, Springer, and all other stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's a good observation. Right, that often the arguments and approaches are elaborated more extensively in the book form. There's more space to, as you said, to lay out the arguments and so on. But at the same time, it takes longer usually to write a book than an article, so perhaps the most sort of up-to-date information regarding more specific issues can be found in the journals. Perhaps those journal articles then lead to books later on. Might be work underway that's being developed in that direction as well. But that's certainly a very good point.
Yeah, I also consider the question of audience and very, very interesting and important. I was wondering if somebody on this side of the room can add something to this particular question or want to add something other to this. So it was a challenge.
Okay. Yes, my group agrees with the with her, but in my field there is a special feature that to attract readers you need to be visual, so maybe books allow more freedom with visuality and illustrations, because I'm urban planner, so you need maps and pictures and so on.
Thank you.
Yes, also a good point. Certainly depends on the field, what sorts of material needs to be included in the publications. And certainly in urban planning, all the layouts and visual materials are pretty crucial.
Yeah, actually for myself also as a historian, it seems to be very important what kind of source materials we are using. Someone is using pictures, for example, visual material. Maybe the book form is very suitable for that also.
Anyone who would like to prioritize journals over books? No? No economists among us, for instance? Wait, I'll bring you the mic.
I must say that in my field, I guess the most important way to publish is articles, and I think that perhaps we could put the stuff in small room to get all that necessary information in one article. And I think also that they are more accessible and people can read them much more better way than books or edited volumes, for example. I have noticed that there are some problems to find those edited volumes where there is just one article which might interest me, so that in that perspective I would prefer articles.
Yes, and you come basically from economic history, so close to economics. Right, yeah. Certainly the accessibility issue. More and more journals are electronically available, and of course quite a lot of books are as well, but not all books or all journals, and often particularly with edited volumes it can be challenging if you're looking for one particular chapter out of an edited volume and the volume isn't available in the library. It can be a bit of a hassle to track it down. Well, what about publishers then? I think you already mentioned some of the Cambridge, what else, Oxford, Sage. All very big publishing houses. Varies a little bit between the fields, of course, but all of them, lots of output. Lots of important. Princeton, Cambridge, Oxford, Sage. Yeah. Routledge, yes. University of Chicago. Verso.
Many of them are from the English-speaking world, tend to be. Are there any from the German linguistic context?
Well, Springer, I guess.
Springer.
Yeah. In principle, anyway. How many of you have been involved in some kind of book format publishing, or are involved in it, for instance, in putting together an edited volume or perhaps a monograph? Yeah. Several of you are. Yeah. Good. Are these sort of works in progress, or have they already appeared? Progress. Looks like you want to say something. No? No. Okay, sorry. Yes, I thought you looked like you wanted to speak up. Yeah.
Thank you. Sometimes the publishing processes can be quite long. For example, 3 or 4 years for an edited book. So in many cases, articles might be faster to publish, but not in all cases.
Yeah, certainly. Articles can be faster to publish. It depends a bit on the peer review process, which can take a long time with articles as well. But, of course, just in terms of the amount of text that you produce and the whole complicated nature of the process, putting together a book takes...
Yeah, but that's. I think that's also true what you said about the article versus book form, because sometimes, at least, I have a feeling that I have gathered source material and gathered generally I would have much to say about this or that topic, and I would like to say it like quickly and not hide it into the desk drawer. So I guess the article could be a good way to publish your results even during the process. I don't know what you think about this, that when you are you allowed to publish things that are not in the process. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Why not?
I mean, yeah.
Often can be a really good way to start with articles and develop them more that way.
Yeah. I mean, when you read an article, it doesn't seem that when you read an article which is in the process and after 2 years the results are something else. Or does it happen? Maybe that happens too, but...
I think it happens a lot. It's progress with the research.
So where's the science, I mean? If you can publish... Do you know what I mean? You publish a work, publish an article, and it's a kind of a hypothesis, or one argument, and then it changes. Maybe it changes to a better argument.
Actually, what I wanted to emphasize is that actually books can be different types of books. For instance, a handbook, where you can find like a series of chapters which are devoted to one topic or theme. And the handbook actually supposes that you will find a method how to do the same research. So it's very helpful in sense of your own application, those thoughts and ideas. Also, books might be published like theory books or like a speculation on a particular topic to break through. And also edited volume. And actually, I have a question to our lecturers. Is there any difference between a handbook and edited volume?
Okay, thank you. Yes, well, handbooks, I guess, are a form of edited volume, but they tend to be often very focused in that they're often a sort of big project led by a set of editors or one editor on a very big theme often, like sort of a series of these Oxford handbooks and other things on, say, on globalization or on a particular theme, where you then Often people are invited to contribute chapters, and it's kind of a particularly prestigious thing often to get to do that. And often they're fairly short contributions, and you're supposed to sort of distill a lot of information into a short space, and it's sort of expected that you master the literature, and it's almost a bit like a very extended encyclopedia entry, I guess. Yeah. Whereas edited volumes can be much more varied than that. Mm. Maybe Tuomas can say more.
Yeah, and like focused on some particular question, maybe. Mm. Or, I mean, what comes to my mind from the concept of handbook is, for example, the Routledge History of Childhood in the Western World, which is actually tries to cover practically, basically every field of history where you can imagine that children have been involved, or kind of contexts like children in war and children in peace and everything. Basically tries to cover everything. And very prestigious writers.
So I believe you've just been invited to contribute yourself to a kind of handbook.
Yeah, that was a bit different kind of. It was an encyclopedia of history of psychology.
Mm-hmm. But still a similar kind of. So often handbooks have more items, more entries. They tend to be perhaps a bit shorter, more kind of packed with information, perhaps, and often very large books, 1,000 pages or whatever. So.
Yeah. Who buys them?
Libraries. Isn't that who buys academic books in general? I'll jump over them.
Awesome. Yeah. For example, I'm thinking now in the case of edited polymems with some various kind of contributors. The problem there is when you are trying to do research in a very specific field and you try to do research on the different books that are published on the issue, you can dismiss a good work on your issue because it's published in an edited volume that is apparently not related to your field. So that's normally something that happens with edited volumes that is not so frequent in the case of handbooks, because normally the title of the handbook is very illustrative of the contents, and it's a problem with edited volumes that normally you need someone who says, I think you can find a good work there. If not, you can be lost, or you can be losing some valuable information to do research. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. That's a good point. It can be much more challenging to find about specific chapters in edited volumes. Often the title of the edited book itself is easy to find, but not necessarily always the details about all the individual chapters. That's definitely true. Yes. Yeah.
I would like to ask a question more than anything. You have this experience of publishing scientific books, and what do you recommend approaching the publisher from the basis of abstract or perhaps some kind of sample or idea during the process or with a ready manuscript, and if you prefer the manuscript type, are you approaching many publishers at the same time or just focusing on one at the time?
Okay, thank you.
Very
excellent
question, I think.
I think it actually also leads us in the direction of the sort of more practical stuff that we're going to talk about next. But to answer maybe the last question first, you really should not approach several publishers at the same time with the same proposal. That's considered bad form, and sometimes the publishers are also in contact with each other, not so specifically about one particular proposal, but they do talk to each other. And if they find out that three or four of them are reading the same proposal, they're not going to be very happy. So it's really always the case that you should sort of approach one at a time and wait to hear back from them before you go to anyone else.
So if the process is taking about years perhaps, or 1 year, so you can expect when you get the answer,
Yeah, it does take a while. I mean, you could, or I should maybe be more specific here, that in terms of sending a book proposal or an actual manuscript, you should never send those to more than one. But you can, of course, more informally ask, send an email to, say, a couple of different editors and say, I'm thinking about doing a book on this or that. Is this something that might be of interest to you? That's okay. But then to go beyond that into the actual evaluation of proposals and so on, this costs money to the publishers because they have to get external experts in most cases to look at them. They have to invest in the process. So you can sort of have initial contact with publishers, certainly talk to them or email them or call them, see if they're interested in theory or also in practice. But then when you take it a step further in terms of the actual proposal or the text of the book, then approaching multiple ones at the same time is considered bad.
But I think it is allowed to expect an answer in a reasonable time. I think it's also bad behavior from the side of the publisher if they don't communicate, I think.
Yeah, you should hear, certainly from a kind of initial inquiry, you should hear it back quite quickly. And then if you send in a proposal, the editor will normally tell you what sort of time frame they hope to work on, when they expect to hear back from their reviewers and so on. Although, I guess Tuomas is going to tell us about some challenges which may come up.
Some challenges.
And as far as the other things that you asked about, I think that's something that we're going to address either today or next time in sort of more depth. But maybe shall we get started, Tuomas, or are there any other questions, comments, observations before we do that? Okay. Well then, we're going to look at more depth at a particular project, which Tuomas has been involved in and which is now successfully completed, and you can go and buy it after class if you want.
It's only $140. So I'm going to tell a bit about this one particular publishing process. And I try not to express myself in too many words. So
by the way, if you have at any point you have comments or questions or want to ask about something, just
I don't want to give you an impression of lecturing or anything like that. But so this is a book titled "Encountering Crisis of the Mind, Madness, Culture, and Society," so on, and it just came out today or tomorrow. I can show it. It's this kind of book. It's as I said, it's $143, almost 120 euros if you want to buy it. But I can buy it cheaper because I'm an editor. So it looks like this. There's this blue brain. It's a brain of a depressed. It's a watercolor art brain of a depressed man, as envisioned by an artist. But I don't want to go into details related to this book. It's a book about the history of mental health and madness.
So the blue brain is just symbolic, meaning
it's a symbolic.
Blue, not that the
being blue.
Brain turns blue when
it's... No, it doesn't hopefully turn blue in real life, but like in metaphorical ways. Okay. Yeah, leave it at that. So, I will say a few words about the initial impetus came from this book came from the seminar Crisis of Mind, which was organized by our Department of History and Ethnology in 2013 already. It was a seminar, international seminar, or a few keynote speakers came from Britain and from Denmark. And both of those keynote speakers are actually in the book also. So this was held 5 years ago. And the book proposal was sent in February 2015, and now I don't have the book proposal with me, but I believe that you're gonna tell about book proposals
in the future. We'll look at book proposals next week in more depth, yeah.
Okay. But we used considerable amount of energy to prepare a good book proposal. And actually, Pertti also read the proposal and gave his advice how to make an even better. And so, positive answer came. It took quite a while, actually. No, 4 months. Mm. And is it a kind of a normal time? I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It came in June 2015, and it was a series called Clio Medica. It was funny at the time. We suspected something problems because we had heard that Clio Medica series had been sold to another owner, another publisher. It was Rodopi, Dutch publisher. I guess Brill is also Dutch. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Yeah, but it was sold to Brill, and so we suspected some problems with that because there. Anything can happen, but okay, we was given this author guide, and we were advised to follow carefully all the instructions in this guide. So this was very good, very explicitly said many things about. So it was good service from the side of the publisher. We were given very good instructions about how to do the copy editing, which of course we have to do by ourselves, and typesetting, any kind of formal things, and also advice related to edited volumes. This is quite good, actually. This big publisher seems to get good advice also. But also they expect that we have to do all the work also, so they don't do copy editing, and the manuscripts should be very ready when it goes to the production department. So that's also why they give this.
This varies a bit, by the way. Some publishers do their own copy editing,
okay,
but Brill doesn't, apparently.
Yeah. So Brill wants us to do the work. For free, of course. And okay.
Can I ask at this point?
Okay.
Was it difficult in the beginning to decide which contributions from the conference to take forward into the book, or did you take everything that was presented?
No, we had 50-20 presentations. So it wasn't a big conference. It was like a smaller kind of seminar. And a couple of those who we asked a contribution, they didn't have time at that point. For example, Ville Kivimäki decided not to write because he was currently preparing his English language version of his dissertation at the time, and he didn't want to come to this book. But we decided to take a couple of articles which we thought they wouldn't maybe fit into so well. But we had to do some decisions at that point. So it was 10 authors. We started to write our articles or book chapters, and I tried to, as a responsible editor, give us as good instructions as possible at that point, because it would be, well, I tried. I would have maybe done it better if I would knew that how some riders just don't follow the instructions. So you should be strict and demand that you follow these rules. Like I mean, related to footnotes and these kinds of issues, how to write good and references and on. So give good instructions. So manuscript was finally submitted in August 2016, and so in 2017 it took half a year. We got the first responses from two reviewers. I will show you our quite critical response review. So, okay, themes in the book were in itself interesting, relevant, and timely. Okay, he had done his here. Actually, we knew that he was a he. He done his review very well. And he took up several interesting thematics that he considered interesting. But then he said, after having read the 10 contributions to this collection, I cannot but conclude that overall it lacks coherence. And then he enumerated 3 different reasons for the lack of coherence, or a kind of a 3 also building blocks for increasing the coherence, I believe. And the introduction, which we wrote with the two other editors, it promised more than what separate chapters could offer. So our introduction was high, maybe high level, but when after reading that you went to the chapters, it was something totally else. So that was challenging. What to do? Okay, was there something more international comparison would be necessary? And at that point, he also, actually, the series editors also, in a separate email, he also suggested quite substantial changes. This is from the three points raised by the series editor from Cleomedica series. Lack of coherence, the awareness of an interaction with recent scholarship is inadequate, and we have stronger and weaker chapters. So some of the chapters were strong, some were a bit weaker. Actually, they singled out 2 chapters which were bad or worse than accepted. And so the main message from the series editors was that substantial changes should be made to geographic, the case studies came from very different geographic locations, 2 from Africa and 4 from the Nordic countries, 1 from Hungary, and so he suggested that we should drop out several articles and concentrate more on the Nordic context. But we didn't want to do that. We answered that we don't do that, and we tried to be very constructive and tell that we want to do like that, like this. And so they accepted it, and sounds good, okay. And they said, okay, please continue. And
can I just jump in here? This kind of goes back to what I believe we talked about in the earlier sessions already regarding journal articles, that you get feedback. It can be sometimes harsh, but don't get discouraged. Mm. You didn't get discouraged by sometimes sharp criticism. And you then try to change the product or the text according to what they ask for. But you can also say that I won't do this or that, like you did. You don't have to always do everything, as long as you explain what you want.
Yeah, it has to be explained, I guess, very well, why this solution. And also, at that point, I must say that, like, a psychologically, emotionally good situation was that we had 3 editors, and we were good colleagues, even friends. And so we could share this criticism together. When you are writing an article by yourself, and it may be there's some positive side in doing things together, because you can share the criticism also and somehow use your common brain, and so that your brain won't turn blue. Okay, but after this, having this criticism, which was constructive and good also, after that we set to write another version. We asked, actually a couple of times, we asked more time. So that was because of couple of the writers, one or two writers wanted extra time, and they didn't answer emails, and they just had something other to do. I had to send an email and again and again and ask where's our manuscript, and so that was one reason, and also because of our other assignments, we had to two times ask for more time. And in the meantime, also our assistant editor changed. It was another one moved to another assistant editor in Brill. She moved to another another city, another workplace, and we had an email from Rosanna Wönstrecht, I don't know how to pronounce it, who introduced herself and gave us more time. It was very polite. So the revised manuscript was then sent in October 2017. So you see that plenty good amount of time in and went actually 2 years almost at least 1.5 years before this second revised manuscript. And then 2018, Rosanna wrote to us that I'm writing you this short note to just update you on the revised manuscript. The series editors wishes to send the revised manuscript to the same reviewers as before. So the manuscript had been on the table 3 months, and it hadn't gone anywhere. It was on the table, and so they just hadn't had time to even send it to reviewers again to the second round. It was just on the table, and after 3 months, Rosanna wrote to us that now it will go to the reviewers. So, and I had actually called a couple of times to Rosanna, but she wouldn't answer, and so I wrote an email, and then the communication seemed to be very bad at that point of time from the side of Brill. So it was a bit frustrating. So I just wanted to put my email to that. On April 2018, Rosanna had promised me that response will be with us somewhere like February. And so I hope all is well with you. Just wondered if you got my email 28th of February, in which I asked if you possibly have any news concerning our manuscript, Crisis of the Mind. And then in May 2018, first response is coming. We are a bit delayed. First response from Brill. And then at the end of May, series editors from Brill Clio Medica series decide not to go forward with our project. So they didn't want to go forward, and there were some reasons for that. I don't go any deeper to that, but one of them relates to this change of owners, and this Clio Medica series had been on a break, and they wanted to start a kind of a new series, and they didn't want to start the series with our book, because they still considered it too much like an article collection, not coherent enough, which was, of course, a bit sad. They didn't want to accept our book at that point, but our dear Rosanna, who actually had shown our
had received two very positive reviews of our book and had also shown this book apparently to this History of Science and Medicine Library series editors, and so they got excited of the book and they wanted to publish in their series. So at that point the message was first lines, we don't want to accept the book, but we want to accept it anyhow in another series. So it was interesting, like an emotional roller coaster.
The bad news and then the good news.
Bad news first and then the good news. So it was interesting. Actually, I was in a dissertation defense at the moment of my colleague. I was listening to defense and reading my emails, and then it was interesting to receive the first bad news and then the good news. It was nice. So luckily there was an evening party, so I could gather myself there. Okay, but it was funny. Deadline was very soon, of course. We had waited very, like, months and months. I had called them, and what the heck, nothing happens. And now deadline is very soon. Unfortunately, Rosanna writes, unfortunately, if everything is not submitted within a week or two, we cannot publish this book. So we had to do quite a lot of things in 2 weeks. The final corrections, illustrations, list of figures, tables, notes on contributors, cover image should be obtained and discussed with the Rosanna, the assistant editor. We have to fill in the author questionnaire. I show what the author questionnaire is, and also kind of consent forms. Every author gives his or her consent to publish his chapter in the book. So many things happened quickly in June, July 2018, after a long wait. And we were sending the field author questionnaire, which is like this. I don't know if you can see it, but this is like a marketing information also. The writers are there, contributors. Every contributor is mentioned here. Like the long text means this long text, like a marketing text. We have to write this. Our CVs. We should be try to think about the readers, if all interested in social, intellectual, cultural history of madness and mental health. Some keywords. And they expect like us to show, is this social history, what is it about, and add these formulas. And so we did that, and we did the final changes to the manuscript with the assistant editor. Basically I did that because it was my responsibility at that stage. I had been an active one, so I was doing the work. I was in Croatia in a holiday trip, so when the final changes had to be made in the, you know, but that was okay. And then the manuscript was handed over to production department, which interestingly nowadays it tends to be somewhere in the Far East. It was in Philippines, in Mandaluyong City, production department, and also a production designer was assigned to the book. And so we at these final stages went very quickly. We were given a detailed production schedule, and actually it was interesting. I think they were doing this. They work in Philippines like 24 hours a day, because I got the emails in very weird times regarding even that they have this time different time zone, but. I mean, it went very quickly. This schedule, actually, they kept the schedule. They delivered the text proofs at this stage, and we returned the text proofs at this stage, and everything worked very smoothly, finally, after some complications.
Great. Well, maybe, shall we, before we get to the experiences and lessons, any questions or comments?
this is actually a good example of the last, of the correction stage when we got our from the production department in Philippines, we got the first, how do you say title in English, this layout, first layout, and there were some, I had to circle all the text to the authors, all the 10 authors, and they all made more or less, of course I tried to be as precise and as careful in editing these texts, but of course there were some mistakes, and here is the one example of this British, very established, highly established scholar of history of madness in India, Waltraud Ernst, noticed that these kinds of figures were all marked wrongly. So there was this, it had to be noted like this. They, in India, put it a bit differently, this. How do you say this? Hundreds of thousands and millions. And
so the decimal points were in the wrong place.
Yeah, right. Decimal points were in the wrong way all the way through. And these kinds of small but very important corrections. So they had to be changed at that point. And I marked them to the... And these tables were all wrong or messed up. And actually this was because mainly because of Waltraud Ernst didn't... at least I think so, that he didn't bother to make these or read it carefully in the previous stage. So it was probably her own fault, so to say. But which also encouraged me to be more, when the next project comes, it encouraged me to be more dictatorial in saying that please do these things according to instructions and follow the rules and be very careful and do what I say. So this is a kind of consent form also written by Waltraud Ernst.
There's a question, sorry, take the microphone over.
I have a very practical question about this introduction to your process. In what time, when it showed up that it was only a week or two to finish the manuscript and give it to published, in what time in that period did you make the agreement of the costs and the publishing agreement and the contract? In what specific time did you sign it, and did you have anything to say about the details of that contract, or was it only given paper to you and you had to take it or leave it?
Actually, we wrote the contract first time. We wrote the contract was also already then when we had the positive response from the Clio Medica series in 2016. Then we wrote the contract, but we didn't really had much to say to this formalities. It seemed okay, and we showed it to, I guess we showed it to some university lawyer or something like that, who read it and said that it's okay, it's relatively good. So it doesn't... There weren't any big negative. It was a good contract, but we signed it already back then. So, and then after that, we did the work.
The contracts tend to be fairly standard. There's, if it's a purely academic book, there's usually nothing to negotiate about, really. But if it has a bit more of a marketing potential, if they think that it could be sold in bookshops and so on, then there's more room for that. But most academic books never really make it to the bookshops. They're more for a specific audience.
Do you have some own experience of this?
Yes,
Wait. I'll bring you the microphone. Thank you.
I have written some non-fiction books myself. There are different kind of experiences with publishers and those contracts. And I know that in a couple
in
of
Finland,
years...
Finland or...
In Finland, yes. And those contracts, they have become more and more not so good to the writer's point. And for example, nowadays, this digitalization and e-books and e-publishing, it's a very tricky question from the point of view of the author, because you don't get they may suggest that you give all your rights to them, and they have this eternal right to publish your work without giving you good royalties or even none of that. And I'm just curious to know about this academic publishing. What are the, is there any discussion about it, or are you only making the job and trying to get your work published no matter what?
Yeah, basically yeah. I think that's it. but I think there are differences among publishers also. You, of course, you have to carefully read the contract,
yeah.
And that's a good idea. You shouldn't be too timid in front of big publishers, even, I think. But I could show our. I have to go to my email. And we just received the instructions how we can use our own texts. So where it is? Where is it? It's there. It's there. Okay. It just came from the Philippines yesterday. So it says that. Okay, the digital offprints of the book chapters are sent herewith. They are there. Please distribute this to the contributors together with the attached copyright letter. And here is the. Can you see it? Okay. Here are the detailed, like, advice. So, the right after publication to include the contribution free of charge in a compilation of own works in print, such as collections of own articles, and I can, you know, do that. It's my own text. I can do that, provided that due acknowledgement is made of the original publication. And the original layout is not used, so real layout cannot be used. That, and you also said the right to deposit the author's version of the contribution in an institutional or a subject repository, so I can put it on Duke's archive, I could imagine. But I guess it shouldn't be the layout of real. Maybe we don't go to that in more detail if you want.
Yes, maybe not.
But actually, I was a bit surprised of the good service and advice from the publisher also, after the experience that there was a half a year which was quite negative and frustrating. They didn't answer questions. I had to write and use the telephone, but they didn't answer. So it was a bit annoying situation. Sometimes I was a bit frustrated, but in the end it went very well. So you have to be prepared to these kinds of situations, and maybe if we go to the experiences and lessons, so. I don't know, it's writing a book together is fun. I think it's something that motivates at least me. I'm very much motivated to write together. It's fun. Also, it can be frustrating. And so be prepared for delays. And there are people involved. So the people are not machines. And so yet. So active, polite communication with the publisher. Yeah, sometimes it happens that the manuscript is just forgotten on the work desk or in the drawer, as happened actually, you know, with my colleague Markku Hokkanen, who was writing a book or sent his manuscript to Finnish Literature Society, and they just had forgotten it to respond, and it was just on the table. And it was good. He asked, like, after 3 months, what's the situation? Could you please inform me about the situation and the process? And so they were just answering, oh, sorry, and we haven't done anything yet.
That's a good point, actually. If, say, a couple of months or something like that has passed and you've heard nothing, it's a good idea to email politely and say, did you receive my email or something like that?
Yeah, because actually when you mentioned that, is it so that we really aren't get so well paid for doing these books? Yeah, at least you can expect them, the publisher to be polite and do their job properly, I think. That's kind of a...
Yes, the publishers do make some money out of these.
Yes, like a lot. Yeah, and also this is very important, I think, this active, collegial, polite communication with the writers at all stages of the process, especially in the beginning. When we were writing the second version, we were... I'm involved now in a book process which the editors were writing, or they wrote an introduction, like a preliminary introduction to the book, or first introduction, and they sent it to us and tried to relate to this introduction, so it'd be a nice idea, a good idea to, from the editors, to be very active in guiding substance also by writing the introduction and maybe sending to the authors. I don't know what you think about that. But,
And
when we did the second version, then we explicitly said, we were saying that please now read the introduction, and it should be related to, because the introduction was the introduction was okay, the first introduction, but they said, as you remember, the reviewer said that okay, introduction is okay, but the chapters won't follow the introduction and they are a big difference. So we now advise explicitly, please, we have to stick into our theoretical framework, and it went well. The book became much better in the second round. It was a good process in the sense that I was myself a bit amazed that, wow, it was better than I even considered it could be. So it was a good... The review process itself is very good, I think, at least in this case. And also follow the publisher's instructions, because you just should follow them. And we also used, you know this already, but there are these kinds of manuals which can help you to make a coherent system of references and footnotes and like a style. And we use this Chicago Manual of Style, which is quite common, I guess, in social sciences and humanities. Good to operate with this.
Okay, question.
About money, what kind of fees are involved in this process? Or is it so that everybody just gets their money after the book is published?
I don't know if there are any kind of money. At least in our case, there wasn't any money involved at all.
No, unfortunately, often usually with books like this, you don't see any money. You also don't have to pay the publisher anything. Sometimes there are some publishers that actually expect the authors also to pay some of the costs, but these well-established, good publishing houses aren't among them. But you also typically don't really see any money, or certainly not much money. So that's, money is not the reason.
But actually, it's a very nice idea that maybe we should write books for the international audience, which are so popular that we will then receive some money from them.
Well, at the other end of the scale, there are some academic authors, or people with academic affiliation, with very, very credible academics who do write books that sell very large numbers. For instance, about Nazi Germany, or topics that sell. So it is possible to do that, but typically not the case in academic publishing.
So do you have any other observations, comments?
Maybe is there any performance indicators for books, like the same for journals?
Because there are a lot of publisher houses who actually offer services of publishing edited volumes, books, or handbooks, or something like that. But in terms of what is the most valuable publishing hours, and which will be put in your CV list or something like that?
Yes, well, kind of objective indicators or whatever, a little bit hard to find often for books. Of course, it's an edited book and it's available electronically. There's probably going to be data about how many times each chapter has been, for instance, downloaded and so on. But other than that, it really often has to do with the sort of, let's say, reputation of the publisher. There are some very established, like, say, Cambridge University Press, where everyone kind of assumes that the quality has to be good, and generally that is the case. And other publishers that are well-known have been historically established as well-known publishing houses, but of course much more, say, less well-known publishers also produce a lot of good stuff, so it's difficult to find a very objective way of measuring that, really, I think, in my opinion.
What was the reason you go to Brill?
It was basically, yeah, thank you.
Question was why Brill? Yes.
Yeah, why Brill? Okay. Initially, I think because we knew that, for example, this Clio Medica series was one of the potential places where they might be interested in our kind of research, what we're doing. And Brill has published quite a lot, medical history. So basically, when we were mapping the possible publishers, we decided to go for Brill because of their, of course, it's a established publishing house, but also it has the backlist. We watched the backlist, of course. Take a look at the backlist. It's a good idea if there are any similar kind of publications. We were using research books published by Brill in our own research before, and we knew that it was a publisher which has a potential. So we went for it, and they accepted. In case they wouldn't have accepted our proposal, we would basically, maybe we had some other option, like a backup plan also. I don't remember what was it.
Yeah, and I think this is where one of the things that came up in the beginning of the lecture when you were talking amongst each other, it's a good idea, as Thomas just said, to think about in your own field where the sort of significant books appear, what kinds of publishers. There's probably multiple publishers that are relevant, but also if there's any particular series, as in this case there was, those can be important outlets for work in that field, because people will follow what's happening in those series. So to be aware of these kinds of issues in your own field, I think, is
So while we were in the beginning of our book publishing process, actually I was doing my PhD work, and I was very lucky to have colleagues who were more senior colleagues than me, and I could, you know, they at that time they knew much more about these publishers, and we asked people and we were sharing opinions. And you should also ask more senior colleagues if that maybe helps also.
That's true, yeah. Your supervisors or other colleagues, it's often very good to talk to them and just exchange ideas about what might be good places to publish. Any further thoughts, questions, comments?
It seems very annoying to try to make the authors do their corrections in a very short time. So what do you do if somebody doesn't do the corrections? Do you, as an editor, do that for them, or can you drop someone out?
Basically, I have some kind of own ideology has been developed over the years. And I really, if I don't get the corrections, I have to do them myself, because I can also, you know, govern my old time, and I can do this. You're right. It's very annoying that people are not. How could you say that they are not
reliable?
No. They are not in a same kind of time zone or something like that. They are doing things in a different rhythm, and it's challenging.
Yes, that's a very polite way of putting it.
Yeah, I don't want to say that they're idiots, but...
Thank you. Is it normal that at first nothing... is it normal that at first nothing is heard about from the publisher, and then they suddenly demand corrections in, for example, in 2 weeks?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I don't know what is normal, but it sounds that people have similar kinds of experiences.
Yeah, I think, yes, it varies a lot, obviously. I think this, whatever it was, 7 months of almost total silence, I think that's kind of unusual. Mm-hmm. But it's not so unusual, I think, at the very end of the process to get very tight deadlines. It's just to accelerate towards the end when they realize that it has to come out next month. Then suddenly
it's like in the army.
Jump.
You wait 7 hours, and then you have to... Suddenly you have to go to some place very quickly. But to the question of how to manage the bunch of writers in different, for example, in different parts of the globe, you have to, of course, to consider very practical issues also. And if one is living in the States and you are in Finland, you have to not to expect an answer right away, because he or she might be sleeping. Okay, but you know, it's a kind of a, I don't know, cannot give a very good instructions. You just have to be polite and demanding.
One short comment about the time frame and how to manage time management of a book, of a publishing process. For instance, in those book projects in which I participated, editors always notified us beforehand, so this is a deadline.
Right.
And we are going to meet it, and if you are not able or you have some other issues, please notify us beforehand. So it gives you, like a contributor, an opportunity to say, I'm on my maternity leave or something like that. I'm not going to participate, or I will postpone this process to a particular moment. So it's just like puts you in a position that you don't expect something more from people who are in the project.
That's very good. And I guess it is perhaps reasonable. At least we did it that we gave a deadline which was a bit before the actual deadline for us. So we wanted to put the deadline, like if our deadline was, say, end of May, so we asked the writers to send their material, like end of April or something like that. So there's plenty of space or plenty of time to, if it there will come delays, so we can manage that.
Okay, we need to start to wrap it up, but let's take one more comment.
Thank you very much for giving me this last question. I'm very pleased, and I want to thank you for extremely honest and wonderful dissertation for all of us, and you gave us very good advice. So my question is, are you going to offer your next manuscript to Brill?
No.
The answer is no.
No, I don't think so. But, of course, yeah. Yeah, at times it was a bit frustrating, but yeah, no, I won't.
Right, well, thanks very much, first of all, to Tuomas, who has done the bulk of, I think, as was said, very honest and very kind of revealing looking sort of behind the scenes of the editing process, which, and also some of the challenges and frustrations that can come up along the way, but as he said, it's ended well. The book is out. It looks really good.
It's a good series.
Yeah.
It's
well done.
Good series.
And thanks to all of you for attending and for your questions and comments and so on. And next week, we'll continue with a related topic, focusing more really on monographs, not edited volumes. And I'll also pay particular attention to the sort of early stages of the process in terms of book proposal, what those should look like, what to think about there. And one good thing you could do in preparation would be to look at one or two publishers, perhaps the ones that are particularly relevant in your field. They all have websites, and on the websites there's going to be a link to sort of guide to authors, something along those kinds of lines, where you can see some of the sorts of guidelines that they give to people about what to do in terms of contacting them, what to do with a book proposal, that kind of thing. If you could familiarize yourself with some of those kinds of guidelines, that would be very helpful. And thanks very much. See you next week. The slides will be up on Moodle, and assuming that we've managed to record this correctly, which I think we have, also the recording will be available. So, thank you.